Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Some of you have your little tablets and gizmos, so we'll chant together responsively text 10 from Canto 1, Chapter 3. Panchama Kapilo Nama Siddhesha Kala Viplutam Pravacha Suraye Sankhyam Tatvagrama Vinirnayam The fifth one. Kapilaha Kapila
Nama
of the name Siddheshaha
the foremost amongst the perfect.
Kala
time.
Viplutam
lost.
Pravacha
said.
Asuraye
unto the Brahmana named Asuri.
Sankhyam
metaphysics.
Tatvagrama
the sum total of the creative elements.
Vinirnayam
exposition.
Translation. The fifth incarnation named Lord Kapila is foremost among perfected beings. He gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana, for in the course of time this knowledge had been lost. Which indicated it was existed previously and then got lost, so he presented it again. Purport. The sum total of the creative elements is 24 in all. Each and every one of them is explicitly explained in the system of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is generally called metaphysics by the European scholars. The etymological meaning of Sankhya is, quote, that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. That which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. This was done for the first time by Lord Kapila. Although the verse makes it sound like it existed and then it got lost and then he presented it again. Who is said herein to be the fifth in the line of incarnations. Well, the fifth in the line of incarnations is in this mini list. It's not like there was only four incarnations before him. Rather, this is a summary, a mini summary of incarnations, foremost amongst them. All of the incarnations of the Lord. In other words, how many waves are there in the ocean? Too many that you can to count them all. And even if you tried to count them all, then there'd be more waves and more waves. So similarly, the incarnations or forms of the Lord as they appear in this world are too many to count, although this is number five. So this is amongst the prominent forms of the Lord, avatar, presentations of the Lord in this world. Kapila is number five, fifth on that list. Pila Dev is described in a number of places. One of them is Lagu Bhagavatamrita, a book by Rupa Goswami, which identifies Kapila Dev as a Shaktyavesh avatar. In his case, a jiva that's invested with all of the Lord's potency in this particular category, in this case, presenting knowledge. So, Jnana Shakti. There's different categories of Shaktyavesh avatars amongst the different Shaktyavesh avatars, and one of his features is in the category in which Lord Kapila appears is we don't hear much about his whole life. We primarily hear about his being born as the son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni, and we hear about his teachings and a little bit here and elsewhere. We hear about how he taught others the same that he taught his mother, and that's about it. There's not a lot of detailed description about his life and activities. And very, very strong in giving of teachings, very strong in exhibiting renunciation. So different forms of the Lord, they have consorts. He's one that doesn't. He's a renunciate. Specifically, the verse identifies him as foremost amongst the perfect. Siddhesha, the Isha amongst the Siddhas, the superlative amongst the perfect beings. You get much higher than that. And he acts like the Supreme Lord, with the full potency of delivering the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, and specifically the knowledge that he presents is Sankhya. In the purport it says he's the first one. This was done for the first time by Lord Kapila. But in any case, we should understand that Sankhya is eternal. Like Krishna speaks in three different places in Bhagavad Gita, similar or features of Sankhya. And in those places, the second chapter and the seventh chapter and the 13th chapter, in each case, he's teaching again something that he taught long, long before to the sun god Vivaswan. And when he taught it to the sun god Vivaswan, it wasn't the first time, it was long, long before. In other words, the knowledge is eternal. And it, from time to time, when the knowledge appears to be lost, Kapila Dev, or a form of the Lord appearing in this world, presents this knowledge or this teaching for the benefit of Devahuti, in the case of Kapila, but then also all living entities. He appeared in Satya Yuga, where during which time the process of meditation was the means. So this Sankhya goes well with meditation, and both Sankhya and meditation go well with devotional service. In other words, it's not that when we say in Satya Yuga, the primary means of achieving perfection is meditation, whereas in Kali Yuga it's chanting, It's not that they didn't do bhakti yoga and satya yoga, or Kapila Dev didn't teach bhakti, he just taught meditation, or he just taught philosophy through Sankhya. That's a very incomplete understanding. If you study very carefully, even just look at the chapter headings in Canto 3 where the teachings of Kapila are given, there's certainly the fundamental principles of material nature. That's where the Sankhya philosophy is given. But what's the purpose of it? It's to distinguish matter from spirit, and on the spirit side, then what? Then recognizing our identity as spirit and the source of both matter and spirit, the Supreme, engage in devotional service to the Supreme. It's to assist one, fixing one's mind upon the Supreme in devotion, this Sankhya philosophy. That's its purpose. Mentioned in the verse, Provacha Asuraye Sankhyam. So Prabhupada has translated this as, he gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana. Did a little research, and Padma Purana mentions specifically that Asuri was his primary disciple. And Asuri then in turn passed that knowledge on to his primary disciple, Pancha Shikha, like a disciplic line from Lord Kapila Dev. And in one literature it's mentioned that Asuri, this Pancha Shikha, visited the palace of King Janak in Mithila. And so King Janak, he's one of the 12 Mahajans, and he heard Sankhya philosophy from the disciplic line of Lord Kapila. Again, in Padma Purana, in addition to this Asuri Brahmana, it mentions that Kapila also taught others. Great sages, including Bhrigu and Lord Brahma. So we're in the Sampradaya of Lord Brahma, who heard everything from Krishna, so it's not like he had to go to school and learn something he didn't know. Nor is Kapila Dev giving something that Krishna didn't give. It's just an exposition with some specific focus on the emphasis is really on the source of everything, the absolute truth being a person who's the source of everything. You can go backwards and say, here's the divisions of everything in the categories of matter and the divisions of, or the types of manifestation of spirit. But there's the source of both, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said it very simply. Bhakti is to understand matter and spirit and controller, and the controller of both. There's nothing more. Understand matter and spirit and the controller of both, and there's nothing more. So emphasis goes to the source of matter and spirit while looking at the divisions of matter and the distinct position of spirit of which we are part. We're in the category of spirit, although certainly we identify with the body, gross and subtle, and all of its transformations and agitations, aggravations. It's not our real identity, and through knowledge when the detachment can come, and through furthering detachment, meditation upon the Supreme and absorption, engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. many times when speaking about Lord Kapila Dev, Prabhupada would speak about the atheist Kapila, and Jiva Goswami speaks about the atheist Kapila in his Sandarbhas also. The atheist Kapila was a fellow who proclaimed himself, "I am Kapila, mentioned in the Vedas, and my chief student, disciple is Asuri, a Brahmana." And he began teaching what he said is authorized according to the Vedas, teaching Sankhya. There was a problem, more than one problem. He wasn't the real Kapila, and he didn't give the real teachings. Rather, he taught atheism and called it Sankhya. That's a no-no. The cheating position can be taken up, and in the case of the imposter atheist Kapila, that's exactly what he did. He took the name, because it was found in scripture, and took the name of his same name is found in the Bhagavatam and other Puranas, and went to town, paraded through town saying, "I'm the real deal," when he wasn't. And people that know something about Sankhya, they know commonly, to the whatever degree people know about Sankhya, they know more about the impersonal Sankhya. It's something like people when they start to hear about the philosophical side of yoga, or even more broadly Eastern philosophy, more common than otherwise is, in the ultimate analysis, it's all one. So this and that and the other thing are very interesting and intriguing, but really is to get you to the position where it's all one. It's all one. I'll tell a Jayadvaita Swami story. It's funny. I've heard it from him about 15 times. Every time he says it, he cracks up. He really likes telling the story. He didn't complete his high school education because he thought it was a waste of time. Instead, he just wanted to go to Prabhupada's classes every day and hear his classes, or at least it wasn't every day. At that time, it was regularly at 26 Second Avenue. That was worth it. And high school education, in his case, he didn't feel was worth it, so he didn't continue. But he had a sharp and keen intellect, and Prabhupada, recognizing that, trained him to assist him in editing his books, told him what he wanted and gave standards and criteria and so forth. So regularly Jayadvaita, then Das Brahmachari, was attending classes at 26 Second Avenue, and among the people who were in the audience there was one girl who was the student of an uptown swami. An uptown swami meant an impersonalist teacher. And it's not new today, it was then also. She had a serene kind of smile pasted on her face all the time, kind of eyes wide open and looking around with a big smile, like, you know, being in bliss or something. And she would come and listen to Prabhupada, and, you know, she would nod her head and smile. And although he was saying personalism and smashing impersonalism, she had been spoon-fed impersonalism. And so at the end of one class, she smiled, raised her hand, Prabhupada called on her, and said, "Swamiji, isn't it true that in the final analysis, it's all one?" And Prabhupada became like thunder and lightning at once. It's all one. If it's all one, then why don't you put your food here?
Oh, Swamiji, why do you do like that?
So he was insistent. He would have kept going. You see, because the message of it's all one is there isn't a person to love. Beyond the person is the imperson. In the ultimate analysis, it's all one. We merge with that one and be in bliss. So it's offensive to those who have love for the Supreme Person. The impersonal feature is an aspect of the Supreme, but that impersonal feature is resting upon the personal feature. Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi patishtaham. So it's not in the ultimate analysis, it's all one. In the ultimate analysis, everything is resting on person, including the impersonal feature. Brahmano hi pratishtha aham. Or in Ishopanishad, Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham. The face and the form of the Supreme Lord is concealed by his Hiranmaya, his dazzling effulgence. And so the speaker of Ishopanishad requests the Supreme Lord to remove that Hiranmaya, the dazzling effulgence, so that one can see his form, his face, his blissful nature, which is far more attractive than the bliss of it's all one. The bliss of it's all one is going beyond the pale and the limitations of duality and entering into the spiritual dimension, the spiritual realm, or the Brahman effulgence. But that effulgence is resting upon the person. This is this search for the absolute. Or as Krishna is being asked by Arjuna in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is superior? Which is the best? Worshipping your impersonal or your personal feature? There's the sunshine, and there's the sun god. So if one knows the sun god thoroughly, one will know the sun planet, and one will know the sunshine, because they're the abode of the sun god and the effulgence of the sun planet resting upon the sun god, the person. This is our Vaishnava understanding, and the philosophy of Lord Kapila, Devahuti Putra Kapila, that means that the son of Devahuti, that's the genuine or the actual Kapila, and this other non-Devahuti Putra Kapila, popular, at least to some extent, because even being philosophical isn't so prominent anyway. But the Devahuti Putra Kapila was teaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of everything. And as the source of everything, one can approach him by discerning matter from spirit, by the process of meditation upon bringing the mind to the Supreme, and ultimately engaging his unalloyed devotional service. Certainly that's what Kapila Deva is teaching. The whole chapter about that in within his teachings to Devahuti. The purpose of the Sankhya system is to become engaged in unmixed devotional service to the Personality of Godhead. And two other points that's interesting in one sense, that in the word for word, Prabhupada translates Sankhya as metaphysics. And metaphysics is a, as he, Prabhupada is indicating here, it's a Western philosopher's terminology. Western philosophers, for a period of time at least, were very interested in metaphysics. And part of the problem with metaphysics is, unless you're in the association of a devotee of the Supreme Lord, the metaphysics again becomes just mind-bending, complicated impersonalism. Because the combinations of matter, the way in which matter combines, and you try to disentangle it and dissect it and pull it apart and see if you can put it back together again, it's commonly done. Western philosophy, metaphysics, is atheistic, once again. So the theistic element, or God at the center element, has to be received from a devotee. And when that understanding is presented from a devotee, then it can be very nice, very attractive. It helps one fix one's mind upon the Supreme in a natural way. Some people don't like philosophy too much. And some people like philosophy too much. But the philosophy is there not just like to capture the intellectuals that like to philosophize and then kind of pull them in a back room and turn them upside down and have them become devotees. It's that there's different. Krishna is all attractive, and one of his attractive features, his opulences, one of his transcendental opulences, is he's all knowledge. And so that's there in the Supreme. And as Kapila, being this incarnation of the personality of God, is presenting this knowledge about matter and spirit and the controller of both. So one can receive that simply by devotional service. Knowledge is disclosed when one becomes engaged in devotional service. And then conversely, or the approaching from the other side, one can hear this knowledge. When heard from the right source, it just brings greater and greater appreciation of the source. Just see how wonderful is my Krishna. He does so many amazing things with his energies. One of the examples given in the Bhagavatam is the spider. From the body of the spider comes the web. And then he moves and manipulates the web, or the strand of, Prabhupada calls it saliva, because it comes from his mouth. And he then very artistically creates a web, geometrically, very nice. And then he goes and moves about the web. And then if he wants to, he can withdraw the fiber or that strand back within his body, and there goes the web. Similarly, Krishna is the source. The absolute truth is the source of all things, matter and spirit. Krishna can take from the unmanifest and make it manifest state, from the avyakta to the vyakta state. And then, if he so desires, from time to time he so desires, he appears within that created region, as these incarnations are doing, in that creation, giving teachings about himself and the spiritual world that's beyond the creation, and attracting the hearts and the minds of persons caught in the material existence to return to their spiritual position, back home, back to Godhead. Tamasi ma jyotir gama. Go back to that position of light or illumination, or in the presence of Krishna. And that's the purpose of Sankhya. This is the last point. One sentence here says, the etymological meaning of Sankhya is, quote, that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. It's an interesting phrase because it's not a sentence. It's a phrase, it's a clause. That which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. That which explains what very lucidly? The absolute truth. Matter and spirit and controller are both the absolute truth. So it's just by analysis, lucidly explaining the different elements and components of creation. What's found in the Sankhya philosophy presented by Kapila in the later chapters of Canto 3 is presented similarly by Maitreya in earlier chapters of that third canto. It's Sankhya, it's an analysis of matter and spirit, or lucidly explaining the source of all things by analysis of the material elements. So the material elements are not independent, although there are some scientists that they're independent. They're not dependent on anything. They're primordial. Once upon a time. Once upon a time, there was a Big Bang. And before that, once upon a time, there was what? A chunk. Or a singularity. Or nothing. There are different versions of what was before the Big Bang. And from nothing came all of this. Kaboom. We're waiting for the next kaboom and then it's over. Anyway, Kapila Dev doesn't have that version. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists as does along with his energies, including the material energy, which is primordial, but sometimes not manifest, sometimes manifest. And it's by his will and by his arrangement that things become manifest. And there's no big kaboom about it. It's just he's the source. And it's maintained for some time and then withdrawn. And these are completely sympathetic with Kapila Dev's teachings, or Kapila Dev's teachings are completely sympathetic with Krishna's teachings. He's the source of everything. Everything comes from him. One who knows this engages his in devotional service. That first verse of the chapter 10, text number 8 is the essence of what Sankhya is in one verse. Knowing that Krishna is the source of everything, one engages in his devotional service with great ecstasy and happiness. And that, so this is what Kapila Dev gave during his presence to not only Devahuti but Asuri Brahmana and Lord Brahma and great sages like Bhrigu and others. We don't hear much about pastimes. We hear about his giving teachings. So that's a particular characteristic of the type of incarnation which Lord Kapila Dev is. Any discussion? Questions? Got one up here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for the class. I had a question about the various the count of the elements, the 24 elements,
yeah,
which is Sankhya. My question is coming from chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. And I usually read Baladeva Vibhushana's commentary along with Prabhupada's,
yeah,
to get more insight, because Prabhupada,
yeah,
basically,
yeah,
follows that. So Prabhupada says here, and I've always been confused about this, just a short little paragraph. The five great elements are a gross representation of the false ego. That makes sense. Which in turn represents the primal stage of false ego, technically called the materialistic conception, or tamasa buddhi, intelligence and ignorance. This further represents the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature, the pradhan. So that's Prabhupada's statement, and the statement that it follows from Baladeva Vibhushana's commentary. He says, buddhi means mahatattva, predominated by gyan, which is ahankara's cause. So that's the place that it seems to follow. So I was kind of wanting to know how mahatattva is compared to buddhi, or is equated to buddhi, and what is that relationship that they share?
When I was preparing for Sri Brahma Samhita, I got into this like in detail, and I can't recall.
Just a nuance.
Yeah.
The reason that this is interesting for me, because it draws my attention to chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna asks about the person in samadhi, and Krishna is using the language that he's sthita pragya, which kind of,
yeah,
like literally means his intelligence is fixed or purified. So I was kind of, that's how I'm drawing the relationship there with the buddhi, mahatattva, sutra-pragya. That's kind of, I'm interested in clarification.
I remember contemplating, I remember researching, pursuing the answer to that contemplation, and I remember coming up with an answer from scripture, and I can't recall what that is. I can go down the path again and see how the pieces fit together. Let me just think a little bit. My thoughts are going to the verse in Kapila Dev's Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, and when he describes the appearance of intelligence, it's apprehension and misapprehension. The properly understanding and not properly understanding. So, how can you have intelligence being equated with misapprehension? Well, when we're trying to understand something, or, you know, we're introduced to a new subject matter, and we're trying to understand this new subject matter, there may be misapprehension. But the misapprehension is withdrawn when intelligence from Supersoul is provided. Now, my understanding of what buddhi is, distinct from gyan, buddhi is spiritual intelligence. And spiritual intelligence is specific. It's how to attain Krishna. Now, that comes from Krishna. It doesn't come from the Mahatattva or material nature. So it's something that the term, and so this is where it gets fuzzy or foggy or gray. something like the term Purusha, when referring to the living entities, it's not what Purusha really is. Purusha is Purusha, with a capital P, you know, Vishnu. But the living entity is sometimes referred to as small p, imitation Purusha. So similarly, Buddhi, in its transcendental perspective, is the intelligence given by Krishna, not from the material energy, intelligence given by Supersoul, how to reach Krishna, how to reach, restore one's eternal position. And then there's another that people mistakenly think as, you know, oh, that was intelligent, when it's not coming from Krishna, it's coming from the material energy. Well, that's the misapprehension. But it's corrected when there's submission to the personality of Godhead, and then he gives the correct understanding, specifically how to come to him, how to go back to Godhead in this, you know, in this maze of material existence. Now, I'm not certain that's just like what that's kind of recalling. But there was a specific scriptural or Acharya's reference describing these things, and that's the best I can do for right now. You have something? Okay, here's the microphone.
Thank you, Maharaj. You mentioned the prominence of the oneness conception, the Mayavadi conception. In the 12th chapter, when Krishna says this impersonal path is more difficult, but at the end, such persons at last achieve me. So what is Krishna referring to when he says those who take...
Bahunam jamanam mante, that verse, that's what he means. It's not a guarantee, but out of many, some, at last.
They can get further promoted.
Excuse me?
They can get further promoted.
That's my understanding of what it means. There's no, certainly no guarantee. You worship the impersonal, you come to Krishna. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Yes, sure.
Wanted to know this false Kapila. He's a Kali Yuga fellow, no? Is it from Kali Yuga?
Well, it's mentioned by... I don't know when. I'm sure it's mentioned somewhere in Prabhupada's teachings, but I can't remember when. Perhaps. Or does anybody else in the room remember in Prabhupada's teachings, is he a Kali Yuga person? Yes? No, no, we're talking about the atheist Kapila. Atheist Kapila. And was he living during Kali Yuga? That sounds right. So keep going.
Yeah, it's always surprising that, you know, something so, you know, fake and bold to actually take that position and take a teaching and present looks more like something that happened in Kali Yuga. That, you know, recently.
Yeah, sure.
Recently, I was coming across with some fellow that claims that he's Jesus Christ and he have a big following in Russia, somewhere in Russia. So
somewhere where?
Somewhere in Russia. And in Russia? Yeah.
Okay.
And big following throughout Europe, this guy is Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So it looks like, you know, it's something that may happen in Kali Yuga, but it's always surprising how, you know, how people can be cheated, so easily cheated like that.
Okay.
Guru Maharaj, recently we also just finished the 13th chapter in Bhakti Shastri, and I mean, I've been very inspired by that whole section of Krishna thing, that we have a choice, and we had like some homework application exercises and so on, and devotees have been trying to apply. One of the questions that has come up a few times from a devotee is just how through this whole knowledge detachment comes, definitely. But their question was, how do I know if I'm becoming apathetic versus, you know, I'm actually making progress? And I've shared a few different things, and I wanted to just hear from you further, because this knowledge.
Well, the context is interesting, but the question I would like some clarity on. The question is, as I'm going along in devotional service and I'm feeling some detachment, how do I know whether that's complacency or advancement? That's the question.
Yeah, or more like apathetic, indifference kind of thing.
Well, versus complacency, apathetic.
Yeah.
Out to lunch.
Yeah.
No,
so that's one feature, and then there's another feature too, where some others, you know, with all this knowledge, they're just processing the information, but it's not awakening bhakti, and rather this knowledge is being used even like as a stick to beat up others and so on.
To be done by others?
No, like the knowledge. That all this knowledge of differentiation is used more like a stick to beat up others.
Oh, okay.
So there's these two features.
Yeah.
And I was wanting to just hear further
from you. Two or three simple things. Enthusiasm for hearing enthusiasm to serve circumstances. I mean, complacency or indifference towards material doesn't it's not sustainable unless there's shelter in the personality of Godhead, and there are conditions where one's ire will be provoked, you know, the modes of nature will still be active. One will become angry, and etc., without proper shelter. So, it's something like that nice chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto where Bhrigu, not 10th canto, where Bhrigu is sent to test Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, who is supreme. And, you know, the commentary of our acharyas say they were behaving the way they behaved in order to make it very clear who was supreme. But, you know, the distinction being one who's not fixed in the supreme will have their irritation point. They'll be influenced by the lower modes. And so where there's no disruption in the flow of devotional service, that's where that's where one's really advanced, not just complacent. Or is that the word you were using? Apathetic. But eagerness to hear, consistently engaged, you know, enthusiastic for service, not circumstantially up and down. Enthusiastic for service in all circumstances. And their service is not interrupted by the circumstances, you know, or becoming angry and, you know, whatever. The modes of nature are not active. Okay. Anything else? Niladri, you have something cooking? Yeah? You want to ask?
Maharaj, my question is, like I've heard in some of the lectures of Prabhupada that we are neither here to enjoy the world nor to renounce it. So it seems like the renunciation, I'm not able to fully understand, you know, what does it mean, because it becomes an aversion more.
It becomes
than
an aversion.
Yeah.
Okay. So like this question, she's okay. apathetic. So, a very simple approach for you to understand what is the right kind of renunciation is Rupa Goswami's teachings. Yatarham upayunjitaha. Discuss it with Jai Jagannath. It's one of his favorite topics. The, you know, yatarham upanyunjitaha, according to suitability. So recognizing real renunciation, proper renunciation is to recognize everything belongs to Krishna. And recognizing that everything belongs to Krishna has another little qualifier, and that is, according to suitability, we engage things in service to Krishna. So what's suitable for a sannyasi might not be suitable for a householder. Or what's suitable for one householder may not be suitable for another householder, depending upon, you know, so many things. Depending upon primarily the strength of their connection with Krishna. According to suitability, one may live with very little. Let's say a Brahmana, Vaishnava, may live with very little, and they're perfectly happy. According to suitability, one may have more than what that detached Brahmana has, and that's renunciation standard for them too. Pundarik Vidyaniri, as an example, he was surrounded by opulence and not attracted to it, and it was suitable for him. And we wouldn't say that he wasn't renounced. He was renounced, although he looked like something else, a wanton sense gratifier. So according to suitability. And if there's like a mercurial kind of give things up and then accumulate things, then give things up and accumulate things, you know, that's just the mind. It's not what real renunciation is by any means. Okay. Yeah?
The thing is, it seems like even when you're doing service, you have to really, you know, renounce what the fruits that might come from, you know, what you might be expecting from particular service. It's like a constant, you know, trouble.
That's constant trouble. That's the mode of passion. It's not the service. It's the influence of passion. The younger brother of passion is anger, born of, you know, from the same mother, and the mother is contact with passion. The passion is, I want to achieve something. That's the expectation result, as opposed to, this is service. Now, when you do service, it's not like, I don't care what happens. We care what happens. But what happens isn't the motivation. It's the service that's the motivation. That it requires a refined intelligence that's not pushed and pulled and moved around by the mode of passion. The intelligence is this bodhi, that here is the path to Krishna. Krishna should be pleased. So I want to do it very nicely, because it's wanting you to do it nicely is what's pleasing to Krishna, not just the flow of events. It's the mood of service. That's the happiness which then brings detachment. Just like this other discussion about knowledge naturally results in some detachment. But if knowledge is just like theoretical and therefore dependent upon circumstance, so my knowledge just goes right out the window when the circumstances don't suit me, and you know, I forget the knowledge, I forget Krishna, I forget everything except, you know, being consumed with it didn't go the way I expected it to go. The results didn't happen. You know, then it's fire. And look out, because you know, fire burns. Okay. I think we're done. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki. Oh, there's someone? Do you have a question? I'm sorry. Give her the microphone. Give her the microphone. I'm sorry. It's so quiet, I didn't notice.
Swami, I didn't hear perfectly everything that I was
trying to... Want to turn the microphone on for her? She knows how to do it, okay.
I didn't hear everything perfectly that I was trying to, but I wanted to know if elements of the Sankhya philosophy have got incorporated in Bhakti Yoga.
What's the connection between the two? Sankhya and Bhakti?
Yeah, and if portions of the Sankhya have got incorporated into Bhakti.
Well, you read the second half of chapter 2 and you got the answer to your question. But I'll say it. Text 39 of chapter 2. Krishna says, I've spoken Sankhya and I'm going to speak Buddhi. And Buddhi, in one sense, is Bhakti. Because it's Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekeha Kuranandana. Fixed upon Krishna in everything that one, all, in everything. Everything you need and everything you experience and everything. There's Krishna. Seeing Krishna in everything. Singularly, one who sees like that they're awarded that because of their devotion to Krishna. It goes along with bhakti. It's just describing the feature of the type of discrimination that one lives by. It's like how to get to Krishna intelligence, that buddhi. And Sankhya, like Kapila. So he teaches Sankhya to Devahuti. And it's like all this really detailed knowledge, really, really overwhelmingly detailed knowledge about the elements of matter and how they evolve one from the other. And so like here comes this whole display of the material elements. But behind those material elements, distinct from the elements, because distinct in the sense that the source of the elements is the source, not the elements, is the source. So then with that power of discrimination of the elements of matter and spirit and the source of both, then one can hone in on the source of both, like me and matter, or spirit and matter, the source of both. And so as intelligence becomes then focused on the source of both, there's all this matter and there's the living life force for the living entity, and they all are meant for service to the Supreme. So whether it's external utilization of the senses or even in meditation, utilization of the senses. Like an example, the Brahmin that was doing his deity worship, and you know, he did the whole thing every day, just in his mind. That kind of meditation following Sankhya and its devotional service also. And we're not on such an elevated platform that we can just like sit here in the temple room and worship the deity in our mind. We need the purification. The deity doesn't need, we need the purification of taking our senses to the object and performing the puja in all of its detail. But it can be done within the mind and very advanced stages. There's some examples like that when Chaitanya Charitamrita. But so Sankhya proceeds. It's a lead-in to the proper discrimination between matter and spirit and the source of both and worshipping the source of both, guided by proper discrimination. Krishna gives that. Kapila gives it in more detail. Lots of detail. But the principle fundamentally is there in Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of which is to engage in devotional service with a clear intelligence. Supposing one's intelligence isn't so clear, then one can have the sentiment and doesn't come out so well because one's discriminating power isn't so clear. Srila Prabhupada Gita.